This is Jared O'Brien for the Christians Engaging Culture podcast. Christians Engaging Culture exists to equip Christians to give faithful answers in everyday cultural conversations and to turn those conversations to the gospel. In this week's podcast, Martin Isles from the Australian Christian Lobby discusses the Good Society curriculum. This is a national K-12 curriculum that has been designed to address discrimination, abuse, harassment, and inequality between men and women, with a focus on promoting respectful relationships. While much of the material is useful, material written on sexuality and identity have been written from an anti-Christian worldview. In particular, Isles highlights how the program promotes to children from kindergarten onwards that there are many gender identities, that children can determine their own gender identity, and that they should surround themselves with people who affirm and encourage this self-determined identity. While Isles does not go into the curriculum's graphic detail, the senior high school elements of the program also encourage exploration of sexual preferences. We at Christians Engaging Culture double-checked the website and discovered videos produced by the Safe Schools Coalition that normalise gender transition and don't highlight the risks and dangers. Isles highlights how contrary all of this is to biblical teaching, that God created us male and female, and that prioritising our own desires is more often than not sinful. He summarises the curriculum as a comprehensive indoctrination program from prep upwards in identity politics, cultural Marxism, queer theory, postmodernism, feminism, self-love, critical race theory, and climate alarmism. It teaches that sin ought to be pursued, that you are God, and that you must serve yourself. He calls on Christians to go further than just call out the lies. We need to speak the truth about God the Creator, who will judge sin, but in his love offers mercy to the sinner, particularly to our young people. We've published this podcast because we believe that it is important for parents, in particular, to know of the existence of this curriculum and how it may impact our children. We would like to thank Martin Isles and the research team at the Australian Christian Lobby for their work in exposing this curriculum.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. It's a real honour to address you all, and there's nothing left for me to say, but I'm Martin Isles, and this is The Truth of It. And the topic that I've chosen for this evening is called The Good Society. You might say, well, what is that? Well, to understand it, we need to go back to the Respect at Work report that was drafted by the Australian Human Rights Commission. And that report was authored by the Sex Discrimination Commissioner, and it was intended to come up with policies that would supposedly stop discrimination, abuse, harassment, and inequality between men and women, especially in the workplace. Now, the Morrison government got into a great deal of trouble over this very issue a few months ago. I'm sure none of us missed it. So Scott Morrison agreed to the 55 recommendations in this Respect at Work report as part of dealing with the controversy around that. And one of those recommendations was recommendation 10, and it reads as follows. All Australian governments must ensure that children and young people receive school-based, respectful relationships education that is age-appropriate, evidence-based, and addresses the drivers of gender-based violence, including sexual harassment. There's some in the audience who have heard some key words and know what's going on. Respectful relationships was probably the phrase that you picked up. The Good Society is that respectful relationships program referred to therein. The Morrison government has funded it, costing $7.8 million. I always wonder, how the heck do they use this money? $7.8 million? Goodness me, we could do a lot with that. They just write a curriculum. I don't know where the rest goes. It's also been made available in schools right across the country. I actually talked a little about this on Monday night in Mackay, and straight away I had people come up to me and say, oh, at my child's school, they're teaching this curriculum. And some of them were some Christian schools. There was an Anglican school and another one as well. And so this has now been rolled out everywhere. So, what is this supposedly violence, discrimination, and abuse-ending program teaching children? Well, hang on to your hats, because I'm going to tell you a few things. Prep to year two is where it starts, so children who are 5 to 7 years old. The curriculum is quite simple. It is dedicated to deconstructing gender. To quote one resource, it says there are individual personalities, not genders. So children are taught that there is nothing that is intrinsically male or intrinsically female. Indeed, they are taught that those are not relevant categories at all. They are taught that none of this stuff is actually biological. That's a quote from another resource. The material contains pretty simple exercises for the age. For example, teaching that there are no boy or girl feelings, no boy or girl clothes, no boy or girl toys, no boy or girl jobs, and no boy or girl sporting abilities, etc. There's some people at this stage who go, oh, that's only, you know, it's not that bad. But the problem is what it's building towards. Years 3 and 4, 8 to 9 years old. The curriculum for this age group is dedicated to the teaching that the gender binary is not just false. That was the youngest kids. Now they're teaching that it is harmful and it will do you harm. The teacher's guide tells educators to read books which intentionally challenge gender stereotypes, including the following recommended picture books. One, a book about a boy who wears a dress to school and how this boy and his teacher explore gender expression, stereotypes, and a place to go to the bathroom in peace. Number two, a book about a boy who sees three women spectacularly dress up and wants to dress up like them, described as a story about the power of being seen and affirmed for who you really are. And a book which doesn't use pronouns for its characters at all, so that the children and those reading them can decide whether these are he's, she's, or something else. And to get a sense of the wider content at this age level, there is one resource which I'll quote from. It's called It's Child's Play. And on that resource, you see it encourages teachers to get children to cross-dress and have fun trying out different identities. They are also encouraged to conduct drama activities where the children play characters of different genders. No, not opposite, different. And if you read the teacher's guides, the only phraseology used throughout is all genders and many genders. They never say male and female, except in certain contexts. They focus on the complete deconstruction. It also tells teachers to encourage discussions, and this is a weird theme through the whole thing, but to encourage discussions about boys wearing dresses and makeup. Children are told to think of things that they are not typically associated with their gender, which they enjoy, and the other children are told to affirm these choices. Here's a quote from the resource. Talk about how most of us, this is directed to the teacher, talk about how most of us are assigned a gender when we're born, and that for some people as they grow up, the choice that others have made for them doesn't feel right. Well, right, so it's a choice someone else has made for you, the gender you're assigned at birth. Of course, it's got nothing to do with anything else. It might be useful to keep in mind the difference between biological sex and gender, the latter being a much more complex range of behaviours linked to how we express our identity. The resource also puts stereotypes about motherhood on the same level as domestic violence and sexual harassment among the disadvantages faced by women. This is for kids that are 8 and 9 years old, years 3 and 4. Years 5 and 6. 10 to 11 years old. This is where the curriculum starts to not only more aggressively teach gender deconstruction, but it brings in something new. It brings in the concept of identity, and it contains an activity for children to define their identity. So they have to create an identity poster, which includes all of their beliefs about themselves. And to help them, the curriculum teaches the following. It says, personal identities change with the choices we make as individuals. Identity is fluid and changes with time and with context. Oh, but by the way, here's a helpful list of attributes that might just help you to come up with a few of those attributes, of course. Just how you feel, of course, but here's some help. The children are told that once they start deciding what their identity is, then, quote, nobody needs to change themselves. And they should surround themselves exclusively with those who, quote, celebrate who they are, if necessary, to find them online. Gender is central to the creation of their identities. They're told that, quote, and I quoted this before, none of this gender stuff is actually biological. Boys in dresses feature again, and the gender spectrum is clearly taught, but with a qualification. The qualification that, quote, tons of different gender identities exist, some totally outside the spectrum. Years 7 to 9, 12 to 14 years old. By the way, I'm not going to get all the way to year 12 because it gets... I want to make this at least half family friendly, so I have to stop at a certain point. So I'm going to go years 7 to 9, 12 to 14 years old. The curriculum for this age group is even more aggressively teaching the deconstruction of gender, so that's the theme that continues. Because, of course, all this, what's it going to do? Oh, when these young people go to work, they're not going to beat each other up. That's what this is going to do. This is really, it comes in the Respect at Work report. That's what it's supposed to do. There's two additional related themes that are introduced as well as all that. Firstly, political activism, and secondly, power. So children are now trained to think and act politically. Now that's how identity politics works, by the way. The first question the child is asked is, what's your identity? Here's a helpful list to help you decide. And then they decide their identity, and once they've decided their identity, that's their politics. They find out all the ways in which they're oppressed, and they walk out into the world and they go to war with it. And whose political causes do you suppose, you know, they might just get behind, right? They're making a whole bunch of political warriors for their causes. The stimulus material, it gives a whole bunch of examples of the sorts of political causes they might want to take up. And it gives them a project to write to their MPs and whatnot about the political cause of their choice. But it exclusively includes climate change, feminism, including abortion, and LGBTIQ rights. That's all there is. Now, alongside that, the subject of power is widely explored. So they learn about structures of oppression, victimhood, the evils of being born into a society that's so oppressive, and all that kind of thing. Now, that's Marxism. Whenever you see, basically, people told that they're oppressed, and they get angry about it, and they've got to go and wreck the joint, that's Marxism. Apparently, they wrote a whole book about that, but there you go, in a nutshell. So we dive a little deeper with some examples. Children are taught that anything which criticizes them and their choices is disempowerment because it confronts their identity. Anything at all. And so to be empowered is the ultimate thing. So God, for this curriculum and for these children, is self. Its feelings, its passions, its fancies. It cannot be questioned, and if it is, that is false. It is harmful and it is disempowering. Now, what do you think that does to a young person's attitude to, say, the Bible? False, harmful, disempowering. What do you suppose it does for their attitudes to those who don't celebrate who they are? Harmful, disempowering. Quote, in all our actions, behaviors, and decisions, we have to ensure that we're not causing ourselves harm by limiting our potential or hiding who we are in order to gain the approval of others. Our own self-esteem and self-acceptance is far more important to good mental health and well-being than the approval of others who won't accept you for who you really are. To be empowered is to throw yourself into whatever sexual identity you feel you are, and importantly, to act on it. The resources for this include, and I'll just cite some, healthy versus unhealthy relationships, be yourself and I'm too awkward for my own good. Three resources that teach that. An example of empowerment is given in a resource called Are You Living an Insta Lie? And it's a male applying lipstick and wearing a dress. The resource Gender Norms and Stereotypes teaches that one source of disempowerment is gendered language, like he and she, because it, quote, takes no account of you as an individual person or your own inner world of passions, interests, preferences, and ambitions. It's interesting they actually use the word passions. It also teaches that women being mothers is disempowering. It's very anti-mother, anti-child, right throughout. The resource Gender Inequality and Abuse states that the following ideas are driving gender inequality and violence against women. One, women as mothers, women as carers for children, that men and women choose different careers, that men are breadwinners, and that men are head of the household. The resource says that males are often privileged over females, and quote, that's the way it's always been. It also reaffirms that gender is not biological, it is how you feel about self. It also talks a lot about privilege and social power. They're told that LGBTIQ people lack privilege. They're told that privilege is intersectional. What does that mean? Well, it means it is the categories that they supply. It's your privilege based on your race, your privilege based on your sex, your privilege based on your gender, your privilege based on all of these things. Quote, privilege is an unearned advantage that some have and others don't. If someone has a privilege, they have advantages over others for reasons they don't control, like their gender, race, religion, cultural background, sexuality, ability or disability, financial status, and level of education. It's a matter of luck. When a person's lack of privilege prevents them from exercising their rights, that's a problem that must be addressed by society. And the privilege content concludes with a resource featuring a gay man who speaks of his male privilege and his gender privilege, and children are then asked to consider their own privilege and take the quote-unquote privilege pledge that they will address it in their life. Now, here's the interesting thing. If you tell people that they can do nothing about their inherent privilege, and that there are people all around them that are privileged above them because of the luck of the draw, and that therefore they are disempowered and those people are empowered, how do you think that's going to go? What kind of attitudes do you think that is going to develop? It's interesting, the example of somebody who resented someone else's privilege in Scripture is Cain. Cain resented his brother Abel's privilege. And it was real, he did have a certain privilege. Now, there's reasons for it, but he had a certain privilege. Cain resented it. Cain was angry. And what did God say to Cain? He said, you know what? He said, if you continue this way, sin is crouching at your door. You're going to go on and do things. You're going to let yourself into sin and you're going to justify yourself. And that's exactly what happened. It's a very, very dangerous mindset indeed. And this is what was behind, I talked about this in the Brisbane event a while ago, where in these classrooms in places like Victoria, you had teachers tell all the white boys to get up and then confess their privilege and then apologise to all the girls in the room for the crimes that were committed by their gender. 12-year-olds, I might add. 12-year-olds. You know, it reminded me of some kind of like Dickensian sort of Victorian era workhouse environment where you've got some poor quivering child and the headmaster of the workhouse is looming over him saying, "You are your mother's shame! You are your family's disgrace!" I used to think to myself, what an outrageous attitude. What a thing to do to a child who's done, it's not their responsibility. It's not their fault. And they're held accountable for it. That's where identity politics goes. That's where this whole privilege mantra goes. Just a couple of footnotes. This content also includes this substantial content containing all the profanities and blasphemy. It's constant. There's vulgar sexual references throughout some of the material, including degrading and sexualized words. Lots of adult themes. So there's one resource where a guy says, to me, freedom means I get to drink whatever I like as much as I want. And the only religious themes introduced are animal magic, Gandhi, and Buddha. That's it. Several quotes from Gandhi, a couple from Buddha, two videos that feature animal magic. And sexting is introduced and taught as normal behavior. Now, I just want to point out, these are young kids. What are these? 13, 14-year-olds. Now, by years 10 to 12, and I really will just do a couple of points on this at a general level and get to the end, because someone's going to get up and read all of this out in a public place sometime, and it'll set everyone's hair on fire. I'm not going to do that this evening, because, I want it to be at least half family-friendly. But basically, it's quite sick, it's perverted, it's twisted, it's graphic, it's profane. Note, these are still 15 to 17-year-olds. They're still minors. It continually depicts and totally normalizes and borderline encourages every sexual behavior, all of them without shame, without boundaries. It's not only graphically depicts these things in videos, it promotes them and occasionally indicates that kids are weird if they don't partake. There is also videos that depict violent, distressing and unusually perverted crimes of abuse, and they are thoroughly analyzed by a lawyer who explains them. The subject of consent is taught in remarkable detail, and that's the high-level summary that I'll give of all of that. But the curriculum for this year level also includes the continued undermining of boys and masculinity. One of the most cringeworthy examples is a video in which boys discuss crying while watching Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and then walking around the house in high heels, which make them feel powerful, and applying makeup because it's fun. I mean, what in the world? It's like you've gone into another little universe or something. A promotion of drag queens telling stories about how a guy got into it, political activism around the same issues, and profanity and vulgarity is unceasing. It's normal vocabulary, it's in nearly every resource. And here's another thing, there's a video in this that actually says, this is the only mention that a biblical principle gets in the whole curriculum. They talk about the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And the presenter actually says, no, that rule is narcissistic. And that rule nullifies and negates others' experiences. So what you should rather ensure that you do is treat others as they would like to be treated. Now, there's a couple of problems. That golden rule, they conveniently cut off the first bit, which is that first you serve the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And the second is like it, consistent with it. You're not projecting yourself onto others, you're projecting God's interests onto others. But of course, what's this curriculum actually done? It's made self God. That is one of the biggest outcomes of this. And it has made your sin your God. Because your sinful nature is brought out, and it is made the highest and greatest thing. It defines you. It is good. That is the extent to which this has really come around. So in summary, this is a comprehensive indoctrination program from prep upwards in identity politics. What does that mean? Well, who am I? I'm oppressed, so I'll go and wage war against the system about my oppression. Cultural Marxism, the overthrow, the revolutionary impulse. I'm oppressed by the system, I'm angry, I'm gonna wreck the joint. That's why so many of these movements are such, you know, they're such, things like Antifa, BLM, things like that. They really are there to wreck the joint. Extinction Rebellion, that was a problem Brisbane had for a while. Queer theory, that is heteronormativity, that there's boys and girls and they fall in love and get married and have children, that's harmful. And that'll hold you back. Postmodernism, how I feel and affirming it is health and well-being. Not any objective standards outside of myself. Feminism, mums are bad, babies are bad. The only slavery that matters is slavery to your employer. Self-love, the inner person is sacred and the foundation of everything. Critical race theory, everything is racist. Climate, that actually is critical race theory, by the way. Everything is racist. This microphone will be racist. So I was black, there you go. Shocking. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Climate alarmism. The world is going to end unless we wreck society first. But also, here's the thing. It teaches that sin, your lusts, your passions and your desires, which come from inside you, are to be pursued. And you are God, and you must serve yourself. So I was reminded as I read through a lot of this research that I had done for me. I didn't go through all the videos. That's not something I'm keen to do, but I had research all written up on this and somebody watched them for me. And that sounded terrible, didn't it? Pray for that person, by the way. She does a great job, but she does all the research for the truth of it, and it's tough. But here's what I thought of as I read that, as I went through all of this. I just thought of what the Lord said, where he said, it is inevitable that stumbling blocks come, but woe to the one through whom they come. It is better for him if a millstone is hung around his neck and is thrown into the sea than that he cause one of these little ones to sin. It's so serious. That's what Jesus thought of children and their innocence and their protection. But this is the thing I want to point out for the rest of the time. Let's not only point the finger. Let's ensure that we are the antidote, that we have the courage and the understanding of these issues, not just to oppose these things, but to teach the truth about them and to counteract the lies. But for the sake of the film, I'm going to end that segment there.
Thank you for joining us. Please feel free to share this podcast with family and friends who you think might be interested. And until next time, remember what C.S. Lewis said. I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else.